Oh, hi.
How are you?
Okay.
Let me introduce you first.
Okay. I don't want to use these mics because I can't record. If I record with the mics on, I get noise.
Oh, you want to record your
talk? Yeah, I do.
Okay. So what you're going to do?
I can stand over here.
You can just stand over there and talk?
Yeah.
Would they be able to hear you?
Can you hear me?
Guys in the back, can you hear him?
Yeah, they can hear me.
Okay. Why don't you go have a seat over there? So as you guys can see that Mr. Thomas Kivancic is with us today to give us some of his ideas about the role of nanoparticles, the role that the nanoparticles can play in the DNA damage. He did give us a talk last week. Most of you, I think, were there. And I did mention in passing as to what the basic nature of the ideas are. Basically, what he's saying is that nanoparticles cannot absorb energy efficiently, so they tend to emit UV rays when they're heated. Even when they come into contact with something like your body, if they happen to have some temperature, an object, positive temperature, comes into contact with nanoparticles, you cannot raise the temperature of the nanoparticles. What they do instead is that they tend to emit electromagnetic radiation, and that radiation is in the UV range. Okay. So, and that's what his idea is. And by the way, we're also collaborating with him on this idea. And so he will probably talk about the relationship of this idea with the DNA damage and the resulting cancer that can occur because of the, for example, if we ingest nanoparticles or something like that. So let me welcome Thomas to the stage, please. And
thank you. Excellent introduction. I couldn't have done better myself. Okay. I'm going to try not to use the mic because I'm trying to record this as well. So if you all can hear me, it'll work out fine.
If at any time you cannot hear it, please.
Yeah, say so if you can. Okay. My name is Thomas Kivancic. I'm an American, but I live in Berlin and Hong Kong, back and forth. Okay? And the title of this talk is DNA Damaged by Nanoparticles. The background, in 2010, that's about 7 years ago now, I gave this talk at an ASME conference in Houston. This is American Society of Mechanical Engineers. You people have a biological background, so you have to put up with me. I do not have a biological background. And at that time, DNA damage between cells was and still is thought communicated at a distance by signaling. Maybe some of you have studied signaling in your biological work. And heat, when you put heat into a nanoparticle, was and still is thought to increase temperature. There's a reason for this, and we're going to get into that. I would like to show you that heat into nanoparticles produces electromagnetic radiation, in particular UV, and this causes the DNA damage at a distance. There's no signaling, this is pure physics. And I'd like you to think about this while I give the talk. If you have questions, please ask. Okay? But this is the general thing. Now, the introduction. Nanoparticles, I call them NPs, offer significant advances as antibacterial agents in food processing, burn treatment, sunscreen, skin lotion, and in treating cancer tumors. You know about all this. I'm sure you do. So what is this magical thing? Why is it the nanoparticles can do all this stuff? And of course you all agree that these are good things. However, in life, as you know, there's a dark side. You don't get everything good, you also get something bad. And that dark side, you can see here, over the past decades, these are experiments, have shown that nanoparticles produce ROS, or hydroxyl radicals, that cause cell death and single and double strand breaks in the DNA. ROS here will be reactive oxidative species. Okay? So you can see the good and the bad. Nothing is all good and nothing is all bad. Now, what about the energies involved in DNA and ROS? Direct DNA damage requires at least litholysis at UV levels. UV is ultraviolet. And the DNA ionization potential is 7.5 to 10 EV. And breaking single strand and double strand in dry DNA, you need energies over 7 EV. Now, indirectly, ROS is claimed to cause single strand and DS breaks by chemical reaction, but you need at least 5.2 EV to break the hydrogen or hydroxyl ion bond, this energy. So, as I've just said, you need at least 5.2 EV. And the question is, and was to me 7 years ago, where does this energy come from? And when you start looking in the literature, you find out they don't have a source. It's a lot of hand waving. Okay? They know if they sprinkle nanoparticles into biological solutions, they get DNA damage, and then they conclude that there's something going on, but they don't know exactly. This is the kind of the...
But they could always use particles which are chemically inert, right?
What?
They can always use particles which are chemically inert.
Yeah, of course. And just about any kind of nanoparticle. The chemical argument has been used and is used today, but see, the chemical argument is weak because you can also cause the same damage with, let's say, quartz, the quartz nanoparticles. So this is... So there is a chemical argument, isn't it? They don't understand it. You think it's chemical. So in this thing, oxidative stress paradigm, the ROS correlates with nanoparticles having diameters less than 100 nanometers. This is what I just said. They put the nanoparticles in, and they see, they assume ROS is formed because they see the DNA damage. Okay, they don't have the argument I'm going to present the UV is causing it. And you all, I think you all know this. This is surface to volume ratio, A over V. And if you do this for a spherical nanoparticle, let's say, area and volume, you're going to find that's equal to 6 over the diameter. And if you have 100 nanometer nanoparticles, you're going to get a number here of 60 million per meter, a very large value. And if the nanoparticles are smaller than 100 nanometers, it'll be even higher. This has been kind of used as the argument for nanoparticles, but there's no physical reason given. And again, this is what I'm asking. What is the physical mechanism that links A over E to ROS? In fact, you have a correlation, but what does it mean? Okay. And the argument they use is that UVA is weakly absorbed by most molecules. Weakly. That means it's not breaking the DNA, it's weak. And that results in the ROS. And you have to then ask the question, where is the UVA coming from? Well, you get back into the same problem again, because UVA energy is less than UVB, and UVC is much greater. So these energies here, UVC, this will damage the DNA without reactive oxygen species. You don't need these ROS if you go to higher energy. So in a way, they get away from defining the source. How about DNA damage by UV radiation? Experiments over the past 20 years show that DNA damage by nanoparticles mimics, which means it simulates conventional UV radiation. This came out at a conference I went to actually around 2010 in France, and this was presented. So if you look at the pathway for damage, they both are very close. So nanoparticles somehow could be argued are producing UV. Proposal: heat of nanoparticles in body fluids will produce electromagnetic radiation beyond the UV, and this in turn generates the ROS. And UV radiation from nanoparticles then is the source of the ROS. And basically this means there's no need for the ROS, although it's in all the books. Okay? In other words, they didn't have a reason. They called this ROS, and then they correlate everything to that. Okay. Nanoparticles with DNA damage. Here you see a nanoparticle with red atoms. You put heat into it somehow, I don't care how. There's no heat capacity. At this point, just assume there's no heat capacity. I'm going to show you later there isn't. But if there's no heat capacity, there's no temperature change possible here. Call it an assumption at this point. And let me prove later that there really isn't. And that UV is produced, it will produce the ROS as you see here. And that in turn causes the DNA damage. This is the current understanding. Well, they don't emit to the UV. It's just the ROS magically created, okay? And that damages. However, you don't need the ROS. All you need is the UV, and it will damage the DNA by itself. Yeah?
They can't hear you, Jerry.
I'm sorry, what?
They can't hear you. They have a hard time hearing you.
Oh, yeah, you have any trouble hearing?
Yes.
Okay.
I think you should.
Okay, then I will talk directly to you. You hear me now? I don't want to use the mic.
Yeah, you better.
Well, you can come down here instead.
But all of them can't hear you.
only one argued.
No,
sir. Did you argue for everyone or yourself? Did you argue for anyone, for everyone, other than yourself? Oh, okay. Then let me go on. This is what I call quantum mechanics and QED. Classically, we all know heat is conserved by temperature change. You put heat into anything, right? I don't care what it is. You're going to produce an increase in temperature, right? Now, where do you get this idea? You get it really from classical physics. And in classical physics, you'll see this is what you expect. But at the nanoscale, quantum mechanics requires the atom's heat capacity to vanish, and I'll show you this. So heat cannot be used, cannot be conserved by an increase in temperature. And here QM I'll be using is quantum mechanics. Okay. So what happens then is, how do you conserve this? And I'm making the argument that QED conserves this heat by upconversion to the nanoparticle resonance, followed by the emission of non-thermal UV radiation. And here QED will be quantum electrodynamics, but you'll see later this is a simplified form. The model, and that some of you that heard my last talk, you'll see this is a repetition of that, but just hang on. QED here is a simple form of the complex, very complex, light and matter interaction. This is brought out by Feynman and others. And I won't be using that because it's very complicated. And what I'm going to present is very simple, and all of you can understand. Okay. What it says, heat into a nanoparticle, again without heat capacity, magically at this point, will produce UV radiation. You may have another thing, another solution to this. It may not be UV radiation, but something else could be produced. If you have any ideas, please say so. Here I show a nanoparticle, spherical, diameter D, heat coming in by any means, and because of the high surface to volume ratio, all the energy goes into the surface, all the heat goes in, so there's energy in the surface. See that? But quantum mechanics says there's no temperature change, so this energy sits there until it finds a way to conserve it, other than temperature. And if you take the energy in the surface and create a standing wave inside, which would be the most logical solution, right? You can do that. Convert the heat on the surface to the standing wave, but then there's no more energy on the surface to confine the photon radiation. So what this means you're going to emit radiation. Now I say here UV, it could be anything, but basically I'm interested in UV. And it will have a half wavelength equal to the diameter. It's a standing wave inside the nanoparticle. I think you all understand it. And the equations are simple. F is the frequency of the radiation, the velocity of light c, divided by n, which is the refractive index of the nanoparticle, divided by the wavelength, and I just showed you lambda over 2 has to be equal to d for a standing wave. And the Planck energy, E, is the Planck's constant, H times the frequency f. Now there may be another solution, but if there's no heat capacity, this is one solution. There may be another thing, maybe you have an idea. Bring it up. Heat capacity of the atom. Here I have to show you somehow that heat capacity doesn't exist, right? I've been assuming that up until now. And here I show the Planck energy here on the ordinate in electron volts. And on the abscissa, I show thermal wavelength from the macro scale here out beyond 100 micron to the nanoscale less than 1 micron. Right? And on the right here, you see the KT energy of the atom at room temperature, which you all know is 0.258 electron volts. Classical physics is this blue line. It goes all the way across. And that's what you assume when you do molecular dynamics, console, Ansys, Abacus, those finite element programs. This is what is assumed. That no matter what the confinement is, you always have the same heat capacity. That's why it's common for us to think if you have a nanoparticle, when you put heat into it, the temperature goes up, because it happens everywhere else. But this is why. Quantum mechanics is different. This is the Planck law. I think a lot of you know this. If you plot this out at 300 degrees Kelvin, you get the Schiller curve. And you can see down to about here, about 100 microns or so, you can argue out in here that the Planck energy of the atom by classical physics and quantum mechanics is the same. However, below that, you can see the quantum mechanical heat capacity basically vanishes, and the nanoscale is way over here. So, this is a very important point because it sets the whole argument. But if you look at this plot, you can see the whole history of heat capacity in science. In 1900, Planck derived the Planck law that you see here. About 10 years later, Debye came along with his fermions. He assumed that H nu is equal to KT. And you can see from this plot, this is only valid out in here again for lambda greater than 100 microns. But at that time, they were interested in heat conduction at the macro scale, not the nanoscale, and therefore it was perfectly valid what Debye did in 1912. The problem is fermions are used in nanoparticles way over here. There's no heat content to the atom in the nanoscale. Therefore, there's no conduction. So there's no fermion. Now, later in 1950, Teller and Metropolis, and I'm sure you know these two people, very famous, they did an MD simulation using periodic boundary conditions, PVC. And this again is valid. This is valid out here for lambda greater than 100 microns. Their model, as you know, is nanoscale, but you can extend the boxes in all directions by symmetry arguments. So, in effect, from this small box, they could generate the solution for long wavelengths that occur in the continuum. And they did, and there's nothing wrong with that. However, today, MD is used for discrete nanoparticles. If you look in the literature, you'll see the folding of protein. Folded protein, unfolded, right? That simulation is done today with periodic boundary conditions, and it's not correct. But we won't talk about that. You have to ask the question, how do nanoparticles provide high electromagnetic confinement. What is this magical thing that causes the nanoparticles to have, to not have heat capacity? There's no helmet around each nanoparticle, and at another conference this was brought out, and it, truly that is correct. But there is. And it is. It has to do with the surface-to-volume ratio. So we know nanoparticles have high surface-to-volume. This means all the heat energy goes into the surface. And since the structure itself is nanoscale, all right, the atoms inside that structure are under high confinement. Okay? So if the structure is nanoscale and you put all the heat goes into the surface, the atoms in that nanoparticle are under high confinement. And that's what I'm saying here. The electromagnetic confinement of nanoparticles of a nanoscale wavelength. It's automatic. So there is a helmet around each atom, but it's not the helmet you would think of. Okay, now we get to the kind of the heart of this talk. DNA damage by signaling. University of Bristol around 2009, remember I delivered this in 2010, they claimed signaling was the mechanism for which damaged cells damage other cells at a distance. And this is in Nature Nanotechnology, you can look it up. Good article. And what they used was cobalt chromium nanoparticles. They found it caused DNA damage across an intact cellular barrier. It's a barrier, and somehow it caused DNA damage on the other side. Now the cobalt chromium, this came from the fact that in the West, they're using metal implants in your arms and your knees, and it wears under constant rubbing. These particles are forming, and they pick this particle. So it was a combination of cobalt and chromium. But what they found was the bare cobalt ions were found in the damaged cell. And they argued that somehow the cobalt chromium corrodes. Okay? I found that hard to believe, but this is what they said. And on the side, I know the nanoparticles can produce UV that'll pass the barrier by producing cobalt ions. You can form the cobalt ions directly. Now, here's a kind of a plot. Watch what I touch here. These white are the cobalt chromium particles. The red here are the BEWO cell barrier. This is a natural barrier. And here you see some of these nanoparticles coming in. They claim they don't get beyond this first layer. And then there's the microporous membrane here. And yet, here are some others, the cobalt ion. Okay. And the human fibroblast cells are shown here in yellow, and it's a distance here of about 1 millimeter. Okay. Now, Bristol argued that somehow these cobalt chromium ions here inside the BEWO barrier corrode, come apart. Which is a little difficult to understand. But under those conditions, they could show a cobalt. Okay. And what I'm saying on the side again, there's UV being produced here, and that UV can cause the CO, CR particles to break up into cobalt And then they will pass through this membrane and cause the damage. Two different approaches.
Question is, how do you get the cobalt ion in the second scenario? How do you get the cobalt ion inside the membrane?
They go through, they're very small. And they're toxic, as you know. Cobalt is very toxic. And on that basis, once they get into the fibroblast cells, they damage the DNA. That's what Bristol said. Now, the question is, I think the question is, maybe it isn't yours, but can cobalt chromium corrode? And I don't see that as an engineer. I think there's another mechanism, and that's why I mentioned UV breaking off the cobalt chromium and then the cobalt ions coming through. But that's open to interpretation, but that's how I'm looking at it. So in this case, UV really breaks the cobalt out of the cobalt chromium, that energy. And in that experiment that I just showed, Bristol made the argument, and you should think about this, the drugs that suppress signaling reduce the DNA damage. Now, this is the statement they made, and the signaling mechanisms are very biological. Maybe you people understand them, but they seem to me to be a lot of hand waving. I said. And against that argument, the con is that UV ionization of this will produce the cobalt ions that damage the DNA. So the UV itself isn't damaging the DNA, it can't get through, basically. And what, this is the decomposition of the cobalt chromium. As I just said, UV does not penetrate. It can't get to the, through the micropores membrane. So it's not causing the DNA damage directly. It's breaking up the cobalt chromium, cobalt ions, which are very toxic, damage the DNA. This is not what Bristol said. Bristol said they corrode. Okay. And I don't see that. Maybe you people can understand it, but I can't. Anyway, the point I want to make in this slide is UV absorptive drugs that block UV are consistent with drugs that suppress signaling. You compare this statement to this statement, what you see, the answer is the same. You can suppress the DNA damage by using drugs that block the UV or block the signaling. Now, I don't think this explanation is physical, but it comes up with the same answer as this one. So that's what I'm saying. It's consistent. You get the same conclusion, but with different reasoning. You understand that? Okay. Now, the other experiment, this experiment was done at Pacific Northwest National Laboratory in the U.S. And this is called bystander testing. And it's the idea if something is the object, but something standing beside it is also damaged, the bystander becomes damaged. It's called collateral damage in the world, in the wars and things. What you see here, I think it may be hard to see, but these are pink. And here's a blue one, which is clear. Blue. Okay, they had cells. These cells are macroscopic. Okay. They stain one pink, and others blue. They put them together. they, as you can see here, and then they irradiate them with alpha particles. Cells were stained with pink and blue dye, and only thin cells were hit by alpha particles. They can do that. But the blue cells were also damaged. You understand? They put the alpha particles in the pink cells, but they found the blue cells were also damaged. Okay? You know, as science goes, this is an interesting question. Why does this occur? Right? You all know this. You're all in science. Now, the traditional biological explanation, if you go to the biological literature, what you're going to find is the pink cells signaled the blue cells of the damage, but no one knows what that signaling mechanism is. They have names for it. They've justified it, but physically there's no argument. And the question that comes up, is this evidence for signaling? Or pink chromosomes produce UV to damage the blue chromosomes. And I didn't say this, but inside, and I don't think you can see, if you go on the web, you can find this bystander testing at the laboratory, and you can look at this in detail. But inside these cells, you see fragments, very small fragments. These are chromosomes which are fragmented. And I don't think you can tell, but those blue and pink cells show the same fragmentation. You have to look on the wound for this. So this is the idea. The signaling causes, or is it the UV from the pink chromosomes to damage the blue chromosomes? The pink chromosomes are, I'm getting ahead of myself, I think. And I'm arguing the UV causes this. Now, the macroscopic pink cells, those pink and blue are macroscopic. If you hit the pink cells with alpha particles, you're going to increase the temperature. Why? Because they're macroscopic. The temperature does go up. But the chromosomes, the pink chromosomes, do not increase the temperature. Why is that? Well, quantum mechanics argues that. They can't. They're going to emit UV, and that will be absorbed by the blue chromosomes in the distance. So both the pink and blue chromosomes fragment under high hydrostatic stress from the high absorbed UV. The energy goes in there, there's no temperature change, it just fragments. We call this in other areas Coulomb explosion. So the bystander effect, by the way I've presented this, is really caused by UV produced in chromosome nanoparticles. So there's UV being produced in all the fragments, and it goes out and fragments more. But the cells themselves do not do this. They're macroscopic. They're going to increase the temperature. And the conclusion, unknown energy source greater than 5 EV is required to form the ROS. No one knows what it is. Maybe you, someone knows it. And what this means, to me at least, only UV from nanoparticles has the energy to form the ROS. There's no need for the ROS, but you do need the UV. Heat, what we need now is experimental verification that heat into nanoparticles produces UV, and we're trying to do that here now. And Bristol and PNL experiments show the UV from nanoparticles is the unknown energy source. So, in both of the test data that I showed you, you can kind of explain them with this argument. Or maybe you have another argument. This is all I have. This is the email and homepage. Look on the homepage. You'll see many applications of this thinking. Thank you very much.
Any questions? So, how many of you ever think you could not get very well in your back? Anybody from, let's say, the last 5 months? You guys sitting in here very well?
All of the people in the last 5 rows, they haven't been able to hear you very well. So, any questions? Anybody?
I had a question.
You said that they could demonstrate that. I'm talking about that chemical argument, right? It's the chemical agents that in the nanoparticles that cause the DNA damage. So you said that even the quartz particles do that. You can make nanoparticles from quartz material, and they still do that. They're chemical.
Oh yeah, that's been shown.
So if that's been shown, then where does the argument stand? How do they explain it?
I don't understand.
They have to explain the damage done by quartz particles, right?
Yeah, I don't have that data here, but it does exist, you know.
Yeah, but how do they explain it? There must be something in the literature.
Well, they have a biological fluid, and this is all experimental. 10-20 years ago, there's been a lot of work done in this area, and they showed nanoparticles produce DNA damage. What they did, they sprinkle the nanoparticles into a biological fluid, and they see the DNA down. Comet assay. It's not chemical. There's something else going on. That's how I got involved, because in my case, I didn't see an answer to how you could signal from one point to another. Didn't understand it. But I can't understand it if there's UV coming out. Again, I'm an engineer, I'm not a biologist.
Okay, so if no more questions, let's thank Thomas once more.
Look on the web for Pacific Northwest National Labs. Bystander, you'll see a detailed picture. You can see the very fine microparticles being produced. And it's really the chromosomes breaking down. Okay.
Let me just tell you that there will be no seminar for the next 2 weeks because of the sports and the midterm. And then after that, we'll continue with those seminars later.
I like to have your comments. I went around on this 7 years ago, and I presented it in Houston. I talked to, at that time, a Nobel laureate, and I asked him, I said, aren't you seeing UV coming out of these cells? They didn't want to talk about it. So I think they know it's there, and they don't want to talk about it.
Well, why don't they want to talk about it?
You realize the money involved?
Yeah, I see.
If this is true, there's a lot of people angry.
That's what my sort of...
Right. Glad you could come.
You guys know him? Huh?
Yes, he
mentioned him. Oh, yeah. हाँ वो कुछ बात करना चाहते हैं थोड़ा सा आराम करते
हैं बाकी चले
आप लोग
लेट्स गो टू द रेडिंग रूम
ओके Yeah, are you good? This is worse.